Welcome to This Week in Missouri Politics. From Farm Bureau in Jeff City, the headquarters of Rural Missouri, we are joined by the president of the Missouri Farm Bureau, the leader of Rural Missouri, Garrett Hawkins. Welcome back to the show.
Scott, glad to be here. Glad to have you here at our home office in Jefferson City.
Thank you for the hospitality.
You bet.
You know, it's got to get a little lonely. If you go to that rotunda in January, you'll see folks representing every city, every big moneyed interest you can find, for anything you can imagine. And not that there's no one there for Rural Missouri, but there's not, 10-to-1 ratio of us rural folks against city folks?
It can feel like it sometimes.
And you're the leader of the one, so it's got to be a little lonely sometimes over there.
Well, it can be. I mean, right, Jeff City can be a lonely place
sure. Sometimes.
But truly, when I walk in the Capitol, when our team walks in the Capitol, it's pretty cool knowing who we're representing, having a presence in every county of this state. It's pretty awesome.
It's about the only group that can really say that.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's members of organization in every county, but have a functioning organization in every county. I can't think of any other group that has that but Farm Bureau.
That's right. I mean, I am proud. So here in Jeff City, we have about 200 employees here at our home office, and then we have another 500 plus that literally are scattered all across the state that give us that footprint and a physical presence.
Now, I always start off asking about rural broadband, but this time we're right here on Thanksgiving. So let's talk about, really Thanksgiving's brought to you by the members of the Missouri Farm Bureau.
That's right.
This year, Thanksgiving, always a wonderful time. But I think when folks go to the grocery aisle, you're used to seeing things on Black Friday, the shelves be a little loose at a Schnucks or a Town and Country. This year, we've seen empty shelves in July and August. What's the supply chain like for folks that are getting ready to prepare Thanksgiving dinner?
Well, you're going to pay more. I think we've been seeing that for some time now, but again, our consumers, we all need to know that we're going to face sticker shock when we go to the store. It's not like we as farmers and ranchers aren't doing our part. Scott, yesterday I just did an interview on school lunch program. It is unbelievable the supply chain disruptions that we have seen all across the board, including within our school breakfast and lunch menus. At home, my school district finally in the last 3 weeks received their first shipment of government commodities. So fruit, canned fruit and vegetables, okay? These things should have been there prior to the beginning of the school year, right?
I was up there in North Missouri with Curtis Gregory's farm. He's growing corn and sending it somewhere. When you dive into this, what is the supply chain issues?
Well, labor would be the number one issue that we are seeing across the board. I mean, you can't turn on the news or pick up the paper without people talking about both inflation and then what's happening in the labor market, right? The number of job openings. You drive everywhere. There are job openings, including within agriculture processing. So when you go to the store and you're going to pay more for beef, pork, chicken, essentially what we have is not a supply issue, it is a processing issue. Because ultimately, a lot of our processing facilities aren't fully staffed. So what happens when you're not fully staffed? You have to slow intake, right?
Is the answer to that you got to raise salaries, which would increase prices again?
Salaries are already going up. Yeah. So I don't know what the answer is besides getting people back to work. We've got to have these jobs filled.
Speaking of talking about rural health care, I just saw you were at a symposium. It is a time of, normally the state of rural health care is you have to drive to the city. There's some folks talking about ways to change that. What's on the horizon for rural health care?
I think a lot of exciting things. So Missouri Farm Bureau, we're a founding partner with BioSTL as they work towards this rural center for health innovation. There are a lot of neat things that are happening across the country, including even in our own backyards here in Missouri. So you look at telehealth and what's happening through a network through Babylon in Southeast Missouri that's providing telehealth access to people that
and were
struggling.
And that's you get your phone out and you talk to a doctor.
That's
basically,
right. Yeah. That's right. At any hour of the day.
Or you can drive somewhere that has internet and you can go talk to a computer there, right?
That's right. I found out in my home community, we have West Central Community Action Agency that serves a whole number of counties in West Central Missouri. They are partnering with Ford Motor Company on a pilot project looking at how to improve transportation options to help get rural people to providers. There are entities that are looking more of a direct model of helping small employers, including farmers who have a number of employees, work directly with their hospital to help cut
costs. And that's why it's important to have somebody from Farm Bureau in these meetings, because I understand it might be a great thing to think, okay, we'll get a computer video monitor set up in Burney, Missouri, But you don't think about how's a person going to get to that computer?
Bingo.
It's important to have when the folks are making these decisions, have some of them rumors are there. To say, well, how would my Aunt Janie get to the computer screen?
Well, Scott, here's a prime example. So I'm on our hospital board at home. We're the second smallest critical access hospital in the state, founded by my great uncle and aunt in 1935. Senator Blunt actually visited the hospital yesterday. We have the technology in-house to do telemedicine. Yeah. What we don't have is adequate high-speed internet.
Yep.
When we did a test last week, we were at 45 megabit per second download and 9 upload. For our patients, we are at 2 megabit per second download and 0.65 upload, which means basically for a patient in the hospital, you don't have high-speed internet access. For telemedicine, we need 100 up and 100 down. And that's what we need. We need access to behavioral health. That's our probably number one need in the rural community, followed by cardiac services. So if we had the broadband bandwidth, we would do telemedicine just like that and expand our services.
It would literally save lives.
It would literally save lives.
Tell me about annual meeting coming up. We're right on the corner. When you think Thanksgiving, it's usually that first full week of December, right?
That's right.
5th through the 7th this year?
Yep, that is exactly right. We'll be back together at Lake of the Ozarks or Osage Beach. I couldn't be more excited. And as I have traveled the state for county annual meeting season, over and over I hear from our county leaders of how excited they are to be back together in person doing the work of this organization. And there will be food and fellowship. That's what we do in the farming community, right? We will celebrate our youth through different contests and competitions. But ultimately, the most important thing we're going to do is set course for our organization in the next year when it comes to policy, both in Jefferson City, as well as what we're going to carry to American Farm Bureau.
I'm looking forward to being down there. It's always fun. Love that folks are actually going to be there and you can talk to them and see their face. Climate policy. I know people mean well, but again, usually you have some real skinny hipsters from the city telling how folks should work. They don't really have a rural Missouri person there to say, well, you know, you can't really do that and eat.
That's right. By the nature of who we are, and more importantly, what we do, we deserve a seat at the table for the climate discussion. That's why we are being very proactive. You know, I know how our members feel when it comes to the Kyoto Protocol or the Paris Climate Accord and ultimately what's happening within the United Nations, okay? I know that. But what we have an obligation to do is to make sure that the public understands that we are frontline conservationists providing environmental solutions and benefits every day. And I get asked, well, doesn't it bother you that your cows release methane? Well, you know what? That's one, the way God created them. And number two, you're not giving me credit for everything that's happening on my farm on a daily basis in terms of forage management, doing timber stand improvement to take care of the trees on my property. So we in agriculture take a holistic view. And you know what? Missourians have been on the front lines showing leadership since the mid-80s when we taxed ourselves to put in place the 1/10 cent sales tax for state parks and soil conservation. So leveraging federal farm bill programs and doing even more at the state level to do common sense conservation. That's what I get excited about.
Well, it's a fine thing to be woke, but once you get woke in the morning, when you have your bacon and eggs, you need a Missouri Farm Bureau member to provide that.
Exactly.
And if you put it where they can't, be woke, but you'll be hungry.
Yeah. I mean, you should be thinking of us at least 3 times a day.
Well, we want to thank you. We're going to stick around for it. We got an old friend of yours coming on. We're going to find out if Caleb Jones is going to run for Congress after this. All right, can you stick around for one more?
I can't wait.
Well, thank you. We'll be right back. But first, go to showmissouri.com. This is Missouri One County Time. We were down in Lawrence County, the hometown of Jack Goodman, Sam Jones, Mike Moon, where they had the Rebel Flag episode. We got to talk with one of your guys down there, the agent, Skyler Lacey. We had a great talk all things Lawrence County. Go to showmissouri.com for the history of Missouri One County Time. We'll be right back with Garrett and his old pal, Caleb Jones, after this.
All across Missouri, our new car and truck dealers are building strong local economies. When you buy a car or truck in Missouri, you're helping to support over 20,000 Missouri families who rely on the auto industry for good-paying local jobs. You're also helping fund our communities, schools, first responders, and our roads because dealers generate millions of dollars in tax revenue. Missouri's automobile dealers have been the foundation of our communities for generations, and for generations to come. The Missouri Automobile Dealers Association, the heart of Missouri.
For more than a century, the St. Louis Carpenters Union has shaped our communities. Through trusted alliances, we deliver skilled professional craftspeople, while our business partners provide the kind of quality jobs that keep our economy humming. It's a blueprint that has worked since 1882. Turning Missouri into a right-to-work state stalls progress, wipes out jobs, and kills momentum. Right-to-work is wrong for everyone. Let's keep Missouri moving forward. Visit carpdc.org to learn more.
Your energy needs are changing. That's why at Ameren Missouri, we're not waiting on the future. We're building it with the Smart Energy Plan, advancing thousands of projects across the state, helping reduce emissions through cleaner energy sources, boost reliability with self-healing equipment, and better withstand storms with new composite poles. Moving Missouri forward and bringing us all a little closer together. That's energy at work.
Welcome back to Week in Missouri Politics from the Missouri Farm Bureau in Jeff City. We're now joined by the man I think who probably knows more Missourians by name than anyone, except maybe Roger Wilson. Caleb Jones, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
A person, Garrett, I know you're very familiar with, go way back to.
Way back.
Yeah.
Way back.
So, Caleb, you're now the executive director of the Association of the Missouri Electric Co-ops. How are things at the co-ops?
Things are going great. Doing a lot of outreach, a lot of work with rural Missouri, trying to help not just our members with electricity, but really helping rural Missouri be successful and grow.
There's probably nothing that changed the fabric of this state more than when the co-ops brought power to the farms. I think if you look back, probably nothing changed it more. And now nothing might change rural Missouri more, again, that you're on the front page of. It's something we always talk about. Every time Garrett's on the show, we talk rural broadband.
Scott.
You're the person, your organization, your members are the ones probably that have the best chance to bring rural broadband to folks. What's the status of rural broadband in Missouri?
Well, hopeful. You know, obviously putting broadband across the state of Missouri is a huge feat, a huge effort. We've actually had some of our co-ops actually get into the broadband mm-hmm. business just because no one else would do it in their area, much like electricity was in the late 1930s. We've got some that are partnering with other internet providers, finding ways to just get broadband out to rural Missouri. But luckily, we've got some good partners like Garrett at Farm Bureau. And many others that are pushing and helping to try to get this accomplished.
Well, two of you are probably the leading two folks that are entrusted with charting the future of rural Missouri. With Roy Blunt leaving, I mean, a lot of this money, we can say it probably is a state check or a state agent, but really, it's federal money. With Roy Blunt leaving, the person that delivered that, who do you look for now? What is your strategy to go to the future? And it's almost a little scary to think of a future without Roy Blunt in the U.S. Senate. That's where that money comes from. Where do you look to get it?
Well, I would just say right now it behooves us, Caleb, I think we can all agree that we have a once in a generation opportunity before us in terms of the dollars that are coming to the state. So that's where you've seen Governor Parson and his cabinet really step up to provide leadership. We've seen Representative Lewis Riggs through his interim committee. Yep. He has surfaced a lot of issues. There are great discussions, but ultimately we cannot squander this opportunity to deliver for Missourians.
You know, I think Garrett hit it dead on. We really have a one-time shot to do this and to do it right. And, you know, the question is are we going to do a five-year fix or are we going to do a 50-year fix to broadband across the state of Missouri? And for us, we think that providing fiber allows an increase as more and more demand for broadband comes out, trying to make sure that we can increase and grow as the rural areas of Missouri grow as well. So that's one of the things we're focused on. You asked who do we turn to? I'll tell you, Scott, and I think Gary, you'll attest to this, every member of the congressional delegation, Senator Holly, all of them are very in tune to this, very engaged in this. And this isn't a Republican or Democrat issue.
Yeah.
It's really just a economic growth issue and a survival issue for rural areas.
To me, it's almost the survival issues. I think every innovation I've ever seen has led folks to the cities. The people have left that gravel road that I grew up on and they go get a job in town. Or they commute 3 days a week or an hour a day one way. Rural broadband, with the COVID almost, the clock's almost short at the same time, you can now have a job to provide for your family and live on that gravel road and raise your kids in a rural lifestyle like you want. But it goes back to, there was money to run electric to California, right? So a company would run electric in town. There was no profit to be made running that electric out to a gravel road in Montauk County. The only folks that, you're only able to do that with government funding or folks that are willing to operate as a 50-year plan to take a loss. Of your co-ops, I know two or three of them right here in Central Missouri offer it. What does the government have to do to entice a co-op to make it make sense for them?
Well, you know, it's not even an issue of enticing a co-op. It's really enticing someone, anyone, so that it makes sense. I know, you know, our co-ops are not trying to, we're nonprofits, so we're not really trying to profit. We are probably.
But you can't just dump money out on something you can't recoup, right?
That's right. You know, and the last thing that any of our electric co-ops want to do is put their electric grid at any kind of risk, whether it's through grid modernization or financial, by putting in broadband. So, you know, it costs anywhere from $10,000 to $30,000 a mile to run this. And a lot of our co-ops have one or two members per mile. So you can do the math on this, that where does it make sense? How do we get this done? The government's going to be a key partner in this, much like in the 1930s with electricity. And I've always said that until the government takes rural broadband serious, it's not going to be available to us. And we're starting to see this. There's certainly a lot of money through COVID funds, but also this infrastructure bill that just passed, there's going to be a lot of funds through there as well. Mostly, I think, is what we're hearing is through state block grants. So once again, Governor Parson and his team and the legislature is going to have a lot to do with where this funding goes for rural broadband.
So we've talked about the federal government, where a lot of this money ultimately, we all it's spent at the state level a lot of times, but it really, the real money comes from the federal government. There's a congressional seat in your neck of the woods. Vicki Hartzler is leaving her seat to run for U.S. Senate. If you read the Missouri Times tip sheet, I think, candidly, you were probably the top candidate. You just started off as the top person. You said you've been thinking about it for a long time. Have you made a decision whether or not you're going to throw your hat in the ring for Congress?
You know, Scott, I had the opportunity to work for Congressman Kenny Holsoff right out of college, realized how important a congressional seat is, and really realized what a direct impact that somebody can make if they're a congressperson on their local local families, local communities, and local friends. You know, I've got a full-time job coaching basketball and soccer for an eight-year-old son and dance for my six-year-old girl. And then I also have probably one of the greatest jobs in the world, second to maybe Garrett, that I get to represent all of rural Missouri. And, you know, right now I kind of feel like my plate's pretty full. I'm not going to ever rule it out in the future, but right now I don't see an opportunity right now to make the impact that I'm making right now.
It's a pretty long answer.
It is a long answer.
It's a could have said no. Yeah. So I could have just said no, but I feel good though.
Since she made her announcement, I mean, I know that people have told me they've approached you. That had to feel good about folks from your neck of the woods saying you'd be the best guy for this.
Well, I think more important than anything, whoever gets this congressional seat really is focused on trying to help their communities become better and move forward. And, you know, I feel like I'm doing that with the co-ops right now. So I think a lot of people probably see that and think maybe he can do it from a national footprint.
When you were looking at this, you and your wife, I mean, obviously a young family, it is a very tough life to be a member of Congress. Now, it's a wonderful honor, a tremendous a thing to have, but that life of hitting that airplane every week, it is a grueling thing, and I can't imagine the age your kids are. You can't be the father you can be when you come home every night if you're halfway across the country. It's a grueling, I think everybody likes to kind of say Congress is bad, but I like my congressman. But any congressman that's not from, you know, Virginia is really, it's a tough life.
It certainly is. You know, I'm so thankful that we have the folks that we have here in Missouri that are willing to make that sacrifice and get on a plane every week and go out to Washington, D.C. and wrangle snakes out there on our behalf. You know, it's certainly one of those things you have to take into consideration whenever you're having this discussion.
Like I said, you're both from the 4th.
I still want Garrett to run.
Yeah, he hasn't totally.
Yeah,
has he gave the general chairman, if elected, I won't serve?
You know? No, I'm really loving the conversation right now.
What do you think folks in y'all's neck of the woods are looking for in a member of Congress?
Well,
I'm not asking you to predict who would win it, because I think you don't even know what the district is going to look like yet. Mm-hmm. But what do you think folks are looking for in a member of Congress?
You want to tackle first?
No, go ahead.
You know, one of the things that I love about the 4th District is how diverse we are. We're such a rural, ag-focused district with a military presence. Yep. You've got urban as well. It is such a neat district with sprawling landscape. And I think, you know, our people, again, need that strong voice of someone that is a bridge builder, that's going to be that strong voice for everybody. I mean, it is arguably one of the most diverse districts, I think.
I think that's a great point, because you think of it as an ag district, and it is, but really Cass County, northern Cass County, has cul-de-sac suburbs.
Oh, like any,
I mean, just your normal suburban area. Columbia has a major land-grant university, college town. There is, you do run the gamut of Missouri in that 4th district.
You do.
You know, I think you really need somebody that may not be from a certain demographic that fits everyone, because just like Garrett said, it's very diverse, but you need somebody that actually understands the issues. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you know, as this process goes through, there's a real discussion on the issues and the public gets a chance to figure out who actually understands the issues that all of the 4th Congressionals facing and can help pick the best candidate. But, you know, and this is an interesting discussion, but you know, I started thinking about on my drive here, like how these races always occur. And you know, you look at like Todd Akin, whenever he ran for Congress, there were 8 people in the primary. You look at Jason Smith's seat, whenever those 84 delegates were picking a successor for Joanne Emerson, who actually went to the National Co-ops organization and represented the country for rural America. There were 10 people running there. I think there was 8 people running in Billy Long's seat. You know, I think it, you know, to ask somebody to say who's going to be the next congressman in the 4th or any district right now, I think really you can't make a decision right now, because you don't really know how many people are actually going to get in, what that field is going to look like yet. But equally as important, we've got this discussion about to start up in January about congressional maps.
Yeah.
You know, it's I always make the joke, moving the chairs on the Titanic. You can do all this stuff right now and make all these changes and file and run, but at the end of the day, you don't know where the congressional maps are gonna lay out and what this is gonna look like.
You were in the legislature the last time when these current maps were drawn, correct?
Yes.
You're a freshman, but still, you were around it. I get a sense, and I've heard this from some other folks kind of coming to be, when you see Illinois and you see some of the more aggressive gerrymandering. Missouri is starting our process, by comparison, pretty late. You'll really get, this will really begin in earnest in January. By that time, there's gonna be a lot of pressure on Republicans to really fundamentally change the maps and maybe change it to where Kansas City has 3 districts kind of coming out of it. Where do you think that ends up at the end of the day? Give me a prediction.
Go ahead, if you want.
Oh, no. Okay. I'm very interested in what you had to say, Caleb.
Shocking. So here's my opinion. Virginia was a huge night for the Republican Party, but let's not leave out New Jersey either. The president of the New Jersey Senate actually got voted out of office by an over-the-road truck driver who had less than $400 in his campaign account. The president of the New Jersey Senate, I think he got voted out of office and he still had close to $1 million in his campaign account. This tide that is going on is very loud. People are starting to actually get a lot more engaged in asking who these people are representing me. And I think COVID has helped a little bit of that as well. But this trend is certainly going to have a large effect on these maps that are being drawn. I think you're gonna see a lot of folks from Washington, D.C. and from the national platform start to get involved, especially here in Missouri, because we are one of the last ones to build out these congressional maps. So I think we're gonna see a lot more involvement from national Democrats, national Republicans, in a push to try to have this either be a 7-1 or a 6-1-1 or a 6-2 or whatever. So if you ask me, I think we're gonna see a lot more pressure before any decisions are gonna be made. And it's certainly going to have a direct effect on the maps.
I think it's a great point. You know, we talk about Trump, right? And you say, well, Trump, everybody was kind of bamboozled by Trump or hypnotized by Trump. New Jersey folks don't fit that. I think Donald Trump might have been just as much a guy that got in the current that was already flowing of mm-hmm. kicking out a president of the Senate for an overthrow truck driver. I think maybe because he's been off the internet, off Twitter in New Jersey, I don't think any of these candidates had him campaign for them. I think the sentiment of what elected Trump may still be there, even if he's not around.
Certainly, I think the message that's out there is still there. I think that President Trump, whenever he was in office, brought up some discussions that probably mm-hmm. weren't discussed before now. Yeah. Really, I mean, he took on some issues like education that nobody else is really willing to face.
Well, I think they're willing to face it now.
Certainly.
After Virginia, it'd be louder. It'd be interesting, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of Democrats, obviously Trump could be a jerk. And he almost embraced it a lot of times. But really, you know, like his tariff policy, Dick Gephardt worked his whole life to do what Donald Trump did. I mean, Donald Trump was, I don't think you could ever say he was your boxed in right-wing traditional Republican by any sense. I think he might have been more of an emblematic piece of culture that I don't see it. Garrett, when you go to a Farm Bureau meeting, do you see folks talking any different than they did 5 years ago?
No, absolutely not. Either. You know, you bring up trade and tariffs. Okay. You know, I had the chance to visit with a former official from USDA that served during the Trump administration as the lead on trade. And you know what? It was a tough time, especially for those in row crop agriculture. But ultimately, the president left us in better shape. We have a better trade relationship with Mexico and Canada, arguably, because we got tough. For the first time, we have biotechnology that's addressed in a trade agreement that sets the gold standard for what other negotiations should look like as we try to make sure that our technology is accepted. You know, you look at China, phase one is working. It's still a work in progress. And it hurt as we were going through that process, but phase one is delivering results. But his approach to trade was different, and he got tough. There was pain involved, but ultimately what I heard from our grassroots members is that at some point we had to get tough, that we were continued to get beat around on some of these issues for a long time.
Well, I want to thank both of you for joining us, and we will be back. We'll be back in 3 weeks after our Thanksgiving break, back in our St. Louis studios on This Week in Missouri Politics.
This Week in Missouri Politics, sponsored by the Missouri Association of Career Fire Protection Districts, Spire, and Sterling Bank.
I'm a history buff, like I know a lot of you are if you watch the show. We're doing a thing of the history of Missouri. We're going to do it one county at a time. We call it Show Me Missouri. We're going to travel to all 114 counties of the state. We'll have a member of the Farm Bureau, a county elected official, some of your state legislators you see here on the show. We'll talk about the history, what's happening now in the county, and how the two are interconnected. It's a passion project of mine. If you like history, I hope you'll get involved. Follow us. Go to MissouriTimes.com. You can see it. We'll probably branch it off into its own social media at some point. But you've been so good to us, to the Missouri Times, the show, different papers. This is a passion project that I hope you'll enjoy. It's called Show Me Missouri. The history of Missouri, one county at a time. The first county was Polk County. We had a great time. And we hope you'll go to MissouriTimes.com, find out a little bit about it. And if you like the history of the state, I hope you'll enjoy it.